your body and mind relax. Whatever it takes, without asking your mind to do anything except simply relax. It's not about the thoughts or the quality of the thoughts. It's about allowing what is to be and just letting yourself relax into that space. I'm going to count slowly to 5, and as I say each number, the only task is to let your body and mind relax a little bit more, a little bit more deeply. Again, without worrying about the quality of the thoughts, it's just simply allowing yourself to relax out into the environment so much that you barely notice where your skin stops and the environment begins and the space begins. And the same with the mind. You don't know where the mind stops and the space begins. Just let yourself relax. 1. Four. Why? We're going to do it again, relaxing the mind, having evoked the inner friend. As I count, just let the mind spread out, expand and it's relaxing. Whatever the thoughts are, doesn't make any difference at all. It's just letting the mind expand out and complete relaxation, completely letting go. No judgment or criticism. Simply that benign inner friend. One. Four. Thank you. In this state of relaxation and silence, if there is any sadness or discomfort or subtle agitation, you just ask, does anybody have anything to say? Does anyone inside have anything to say? Is there anything bothering? And then you listen in dialogue. If the mind, on the other hand, is feeling full and complete and absorbed, then you can just relax into that absorption. Om Purushaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Gratitam Puranamunina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anusantadami Bhagavad-gītē bhavad-vaiṣṇī. Verse 52. Yadāte moha-kalilam, yadāte moha-kalilam, buddhir-vyatthi-tarishyati, buddhir-vyatthi-tarishyati, Tadagantasi Nirvedam, Tadagantasi Nirvedam, Shrotavyasya Shrutasya Cha, Shrotavyasya Shrutasya Cha. Yada te moha kalilam buddhihi vyatitarishati tada gantasi nirvedam shrotavyasya shrutasya cha. Yada, when, te is pronoun you in the genitive singular, te, your. Te buddhihi, your buddhi from the second line. Oh no, what? First line, I'm thinking of the next verse. Te buddhihi, your buddhi. So yada te your buddhihi, when your buddhihi. Via titarishati. This is a future that Sanskrit students here haven't learned yet. It's being used causal, in a causal sense. When your buddhi, when your antakarana, when your mind crosses over the impurities caused by moha, the impurities of delusion, moha kalilam. So that's in the accusative, right? Moha kalilam. So when your buddhi will cross over, we won't say will, because it's when this happens, then that will happen. But it's, we're using the future tense here. So when your buddhi, when your antakarana, when your mind crosses over the kalila, the confusion, the impurities of moha caused by delusion. Tada, then, gantasi, you will go to, this is the second future, you will go to, tada, gantasi, nirvedam, vairagya. You, gantasi, you will go to vairagya, means you will gain vairagya, you will reach that state of vairagya. You will gain vairagya. In Sanskrit, they'll say, you will go to this condition, right? You're traveling to the condition. So that's how that's one of the ways to say that in Sanskrit. So you will go to the Nirveda, you will gain vairagya, right? Shrota vairagya toward what? Vairagya for that which is yet to be heard, shrotavyasya, for that which is to be heard, the potential participle, for that which is yet to be heard, and for that which is heard, shrutasya. So the shruta is a past passive participle from shru. Whatever you've heard, right? All kinds of things. So you will gain vairagya for those things. And not only that, you'll gain vairagya for all the things you're going to be hearing also. So not just the things you've heard, even things that you might hear in the future, you'll have vairagya for those things also. Vairagya means dispassion. So we'll see what it means here in this context. So this is the idea. The moha, or the impurity, when we use the word, you know, impurity, what is the context of the impurity? It's the what do you mean by impurity? It's the impurity of delusion, the impurity which is delusion, right? What is the delusion? The delusion is the avivekā, the lack of discrimination between the, what is caused, what is the reality that is brought about due to this avivekā between the atma and the anatma, the lack of discrimination between myself and what I am not. This is basically, you know, this is the whole problem. The whole problem that we suffer from starts with ajñānam, with self-ignorance. That self-ignorance, this is the problem. I am here, so I have my self-experience, and I don't know what this experience is. That's the self-ignorance. It's not the same type of self-ignorance like, for instance, I could say, I have ignorance of, if I'm walking along the street, for instance, and there's something hidden over in the corner there, I'm walking along the street, and I never see it. I'm totally ignorant of it. It's pure ignorance. So I walk along the street, and the existence of that object, whatever it is, has no impact on me whatsoever. That's total ignorance. And Swamiji often jokes, total ignorance is bliss. That's fine. No problem. Like for in deep sleep, right? The antakarana, the mind, is in totally unmanifest condition. There's total ignorance there. no problem, right? Because it's even ignorant of itself. When the mind is in deep sleep, there's no commentary going on whatsoever. It's ignorant of itself, let alone of the Atma. It's in total ignorance. It's like non-dual ignorance. There's no subject-object relationship there, so no problem. Here, though, that's not our case. That's not the case. Because in this situation, I actually am here. So the self experience, my own being is present, and I don't know what this being is. I am here and I don't know who I am. So there's not total ignorance. There's not ignorance at all in terms of the self experience because I am here as an existent being. But there is ignorance about what this existent being is from the standpoint of the mind. And so because of that, we have this aviveka, this lack of discrimination between my being and then the things I experience. All of which are here. And when we say lack of discrimination, it's lack of discrimination between these things that are actually here in my direct, immediate experience. So I am here, and all of these, the things that I'm experiencing are here, but I'm confused in terms of who I am and where is the line between my being and the things that come and go in my experience. That's where the aviveka is, that's caused by self-ignorance. So, for example, when my mind says, I am the conscious being, that's a result of ignorance. That means that the thoughts in the mind, the moods of the mind, the emotions in the mind are identified with myself, taken to be myself. That's an impurity. The self has now taken on this duality, all of these things, right? So the self that as I am is no longer the self that I am. I'm now the waters are now muddied, right? The Atma has become all of these things as though. So that's the impurity of moha, right? The delusion is this. I am this thing. I am this mind. Now it doesn't stop there. It goes from I am this mind to I am this body. It doesn't stop there. It also extends out into the world now, especially in terms of what I am seeking in terms of the world, where I want this, and I want this, and I want this, and I want this. Why? We say so that I can be happy. Another way of saying that is so that I can be one with myself, so that I can be whole, so that I can be complete. If I could just get this and get this and get this, then I would be whole and then I would be complete. And so what is happening then is even the experience of wholeness, of completeness, of well-being is superimposed on the world. Right? Where does the wholeness and the completeness really reside? In me. It is actually me. It is actually me. But in my experience, because I don't know myself, what is the closest thing that my mind has to the, let me put it this way, if myself, just as the conscious being that I am, if that viveka is not there, then the wholeness that belongs to me, my amness, just the well-being, the natural well-being of myself. Nothing happening, just the natural well-being of myself, right? That is only somewhat enjoyed by the mind when it fulfills a desire. And every human being, in fact, has that experience of when I fulfill a desire, at that moment, I have a moment of joy, a moment of happiness, a moment of compassion, a moment of wholeness, whatever. I use many, many words to describe that. But all of those words, all of those descriptions are describing a state that I can live with. Right? I can live with that. When I say I am happy, or I am satisfied, or I feel great, I can live with all of these states. Right? The problem is with these states, and they're multi and varied, they're just the positive spectrum. All of these states come and go, and so they're not as good. They're not the same. These emotional states, these mental states, which are many and varied, are themselves even impure. They themselves are moha kalila, right? Because that's all they are, is an emotional state which is not inimical to my own being. It resonates with my own being. But it's also different than me. It's different than just me, just the simple awareness that I am that is actually illumining that state. Right? Say your mind is peaceful. Your mind is peaceful because you fulfill the desire. Say, you're not a jnani, you don't have any knowledge at all. You're just, your mind is peaceful because you fulfill the desire. Okay, now in reality, that mind, for the fulfilled desire, has become quiet. Because at that moment it doesn't want anything. You just fulfilled the desire, so you don't want anything. So that mind is quiet. But now if you were to analyze the situation, actually you, the conscious being that you are, is the one who is lighting up this quiet mind. Right? That's what's happening. Now the you that is lighting up the quiet mind, just your presence, you're the one who is present to this quiet mind. This you, this me that is present to the quiet mind, that's the Atman, that's the self. That is the immutable wholeness. The nature of you is changelessly whole and complete. It never varies. It doesn't become more whole, it doesn't become less whole. It's the constant ananda of just your own simple presence. That's not moha kalila. That's you. There's no variation, there's no variance there. You are the one that is present to whatever the mind is. The mind that fulfills a desire, though, for the person who doesn't have any knowledge, it is the mind that has fulfilled a desire, or even subtly, like taking a walk in the park, or anything that can possibly bring about a peaceful mind. For you, for the Ajnani, that is your moment of happiness. That is the condition where you will say, okay, everything is good with me. All is well. I'm so happy now. But you're only, you are totally dependent on that condition because that is all you know, because the aviveka is there. There's no discrimination between the constancy of your own being and the condition of the mind. And so therefore, you're always dependent on the condition of the mind, and the Atma is always contaminated by it. That's the impurity. The Atma is always, not in reality, but in because of ignorance. The Atma is never contaminated, actually. But from the standpoint of your mind, your Atma is always being defined by that condition of the mind, right? And so you're totally dependent upon fulfilling your desires. Oh, I heard if I do that, then I would become happy. If I could just have that, I would become happy. And so all of the things that you know, your experience up to this point, you have a repertoire of experience where you will say, if I do this, that would make me happy. If I do this, that might make me happy. If I avoid this, that would make me happy. All of my experience that I've had up to this point has been assimilated by my mind in terms of the things that will give me peace of mind or give me agitation of mind, right? I've assimilated all of that. And that's how I operate in the world. All of I've learned, all of I've heard, all of the knowledge I've gathered allows me to manipulate the situation or myself in such a way that this mind has a modicum of shanti, right? But that shanti is only created by my manipulation of the world, fulfillment of desire, changing the situation in just this way or that way so that the mind can relax in that situation. Then I could say, oh, for the moment, all is well with me. That's the moha kalila. That is the delusion that is causing so much suffering. And with that delusion caused by the aviveka, But delusion itself, the moha, is caused by the aviveka, the lack of discrimination between my being and these states of mind. Okay. Everybody with me so far? Because now, when I do know myself, when the viveka is there, right? When I've crossed over, once the mind crosses over this delusion, which is brought about by the aviveka, when it crosses over this impurity of delusion, the impurity, or you could say the impurity which is delusional, means my mind is now in this condition, right? It's contaminated by whatever condition the mind is. Now it's contaminated by something positive. Now it's contaminated by something negative. It's contaminated because you're taking that vritti or that condition or that situation, that experience to actually be you. So your self is as though contaminated. When that ignorance is removed, through the aviveka, when you have what we call viveka jnanam, discriminative knowledge, then what is it? Yourself is now yourself, right? The self that illumines this mind and this mind and this mind. This thought, this thought, this thought. The self that illumines this emotion and this emotion and this emotion. This self is always the same. And what is its nature? What is its nature? It's the ananda that doesn't come and go. It's the wholeness that doesn't come and go. It's the fullness that is present to the agitated mind. The ajnani, the one who doesn't have knowledge, knows either I'm happy or I'm sad. Happy means the whole, all the variants of happiness. Sadness, all the variants of sadness. I am happy or I am sad, depending on the mental condition. That's what I have. For ajnani, it is not that. I am the ananda. I am myself. And this self, is it happy or sad? Well, it's neither happy or sad in terms as defined by happy and sad experiences in the mind. Right? Because happy and sad experiences that are mental experiences come and go. And there's variations. Happy, happier, happiest. Love, loving, more loving. All of these. Bliss, more bliss, and blissed out. All of the possible variants of mind are there. These are mental states, right? Mental states. Mentally ill. Sorry. It is mentally ill. Mentally ill when we take ourselves to be something that we're not. But because we're all involved in that same illness, we don't call it mentally ill. Only the people that are at the very extremes, they get to be called mentally ill, not the majority of us who have the same mental illness. But it is a mental illness in a sense. I mean, Swamiji's kind of laughed about this sometimes, you know. It's kind of a mental illness when you're taking yourself to be what you're not. You know, something you're looking at, actually. Something that you're experiencing. You take yourself to be an experience that comes and goes. But the thing is, this mental illness is caused by a beginningless ignorance. So we don't call it mental illness. We call it moha. Delusion. That's a pretty strong word, isn't it?
Yeah.
Moha means delusion. It's the delusion, the illusion, the delusion that's caused by ajnanam. By this lack of discrimination, where I take my being to be something that I'm looking at. You know, so once that differentiation is complete, where I recognize my being for as I am, what is this nature of me? We say this self is ananda. I am the ananda because there is nothing more dear to me than my own being. You know, I don't want to die. I might want my experiences to change. We don't want to have sad or unhappy experiences. But I want my beloved self. I want this beloved self, me, to be well taken care of. May it be surrounded with happy experiences. May I be surrounded with happy experiences. May I be fed happy experiences. May all the vrittis, may all the thought modifications that come into my beloved vicinity, you know, be peaceful and kind and beautiful. Because, really, because there's nothing more dear to me than my own being. Why is that? Why am I so dear to myself? Now, these are all these type of words that I'm using right now. These are actually teaching methodologies that we use to make you understand how much you love yourself. How much you love yourself. But now, the thing to understand about that is just as a human being, I love that which makes me happy, not that which makes me sad. If you look in your experience of the world, you always go toward that which makes you happy. Another way of saying it, I love what makes me happy, and I hate what makes me sad. That's why, especially in your intimate relationships, you know, where there's such a deep commitment and a love there, you can feel that toward your partner. I love you so much. I hate you so much. I love you. I hate you. I love you. I hate you. Right? I love you when you are making me happy. I hate you when you're making me sad. Because so the partner is going to get that all the time. The whole world gets it. I love you when you are making me happy. I hate you when you're making me sad. Right? And so, really, all we're saying is I love happiness and I hate sadness. That's really what we're saying. I love happiness and I hate sadness. Now, when you're sitting with yourself, just your own being, this conscious being that is the one that actually illumines all of these mental states, the happy states and the sad states, what is the nature of this being? Of this innermost being? Is it a source of happiness or is it a source of sadness? This is a very key thing to understand. Is this innermost being, the me, a source of happiness or a source of sadness? And I would say that it's a source of happiness, that it is the very ananda, in fact, that we seek to experience in the world, because a person who is ignorant, the closest they can get to that pure being of myself, the constant being of myself, is a quiet mind that is generated by the fulfillment of a desire. And in the quiet mind of a relaxed body, even if that mind and body are not directed at the self, nothing. They're just out of the way, basically. When you relax your body is not calling your attention at all. It's just simply relaxed. When your mind is relaxed, it's not trying to be different. It's not trying to create something. It's just simply abiding there, as that happens when you fulfill a desire. Or when we do a meditation, like when we did at the beginning of the class, where you're just simply relaxing your body, relaxing your mind, letting everything, accepting everything simply as it is, kind of a time out, where you're accepting everything as it is without any type of pressure. Right? Then, at that time, nothing's in the way, and then your own being is just simply shining, ignorantly shining, for somebody who doesn't have knowledge, but it's still a beautiful state, right? And if you remember in the meditation, I said, if you're totally relaxed, you know, your mind is relaxed, your body is relaxed, there's no borders, there's nothing calling your attention, you know, and yet you're feeling inside, instead of just relaxed and with yourself and that kind of that ananda, fullness, if there's any type of disquiet there or discomfort there, even though the mind is quiet, That's a good time to say, to ask yourself, ask your unconscious, the different parts of the self, is anything going on? Anybody have anything to say? Because that means that underneath, the mind is still active. It still has things happening. And it wants to talk. It needs some space. It needs some attention. That's a good way to just practice that relaxation, the mind. But now what I'm saying is that that level of relaxation, we can also get it. We get it through our we get the mind and the body into that level of relaxation through meditation. It happens through the fulfillment of a desire, through a walk in the park. It happens when you go to sleep at night and you wake up when the alarm goes off and you're just, you know, totally absorbed. There's just a natural wholeness, a natural fullness that is just natural to your own being, right? And all you're doing for that is getting the affects, the negative or the hurtful affects, out of the way. That's all you're doing. And so as ignorant people who don't have any self-knowledge, that's how we operate. We do whatever we've learned to do to relax the mind and body, to get rid of these hurtful or stressful affects, so that I can just ignorantly abide. It's called Jada Samadhi. It's an ignorant samadhi. Just ignorantly abide in my own nature. My own nature is absolutely fine. Let me just ignorantly abide there. The problem is, I can't ignorantly abide there for very long because the world is encroaching on me. Okay? So, I need to know myself. The mind needs to know. Because otherwise it's blindly searching for ways to relax, to have somewhat of an experience of my being, which is always contaminated by whatever condition it has going on. Right? And so now, once knowledge takes place, what happens is that this mind that had not differentiated myself now recognizes itself as being illumined by myself. And now that differentiation is clear. When that differentiation is clear, the source for the mind, the source of the ananda is not fulfilling this desire or that desire or any desire to come, any future desire. It has nothing to do with that. The source of the ananda is my being that illumines it. And so now the mind relaxes, enjoying the natural ananda of my being, which is not contaminated by whatever modifications happen to be going on in it. Whatever modifications it's having, that's fine. I'm the one that's present to those modifications. I'm the one that's present to those emotions and those thoughts. But when the mind recognizes that, it no longer has also the stress and the tension that it had before, because it was totally dependent on manipulating the world so that it could fulfill the desire, so that then it could relax for the moment until somebody came in and interfered with the fulfillment of my desire. That's all the samsara. So here, now, look at this verse. It says, when the buddhi crosses over this moha kalilam, these impurities, which are the very delusion brought about by aviveka, when the buddhi crosses over, says, then it goes to nirveda. It attains a state of nirveda, vairagya. For vairagya means dispassion. For what has been heard and what will be heard. Now, what they mean by that, vairagya, for what has been heard and what will be heard? I no longer relate to the world in this way, that I have to have this in order to be happy. That's the vairagya. It's not, when we say dispassion, nirveda and vairagya mean the same, okay? Dispassion. I say, I now have dispassion toward everything I've heard. And what that means, everything I've heard, shrutam means like shravanam, everything I know. I have dispassion toward all of these things. What does that mean? That I don't like them? You know? Or that I just rather they all go away? Dispassion sometimes has a negative connotation. It's not negative. It's that I don't have in myself this feeling that this has to be like this or this has to be like this for me to be happy. My ananda, the well-being of myself, is not dependent on the objects in the world. So all of the things I've heard about, all of the things that I've been told, I don't have this feeling that I have to have this to be happy. Now, when they're saying Shruta also, when Krishna is talking here, he's talking primarily, we extend this, and Krishna also extends it, talking primarily about the first portion of the Vedas, which with all of it, as we'll see in the next verse, with all of their flowery language, right? If you do these rituals and these rituals, you get these karma phalas, you'll get these rewards, these heavenly worlds, or if you do these particular rituals, you can have a child or many children, or you can extend your life, or you can get riches and wealth, or whatever. All of these things, if you do these rituals properly, you can get these things. If you follow Dharma, you can get this and that and the other thing. If you do all of these things properly, you'll get a good next birth. So all of these things all have to do with doing things in the world so that I can achieve something, so that I can be happy. Right, so that's in terms of the Vedas. But the Vedas are really a handbook for all of everything that we do, right? And so when we have these, what we call kamya karmas, karmas that are done, actions that are done for the sake of desire, the achievement of a desired object, these are the kamya karmas. So all of these, that's how I relate to the world. I need to fulfill all of these things, all of my desires. Why? So that I can be whole, so that I can be complete, so that I can be full. Agnani doesn't even think like this. That's not how it is. Because you are full and complete, and you can't make yourself more full and complete. That's the nature of yourself. That's who you are. Right? Then you might have preferences. We all have preferences, the very prarabdha karma that have had you take this body and will take you all the way through this life, right? Will have given you certain experiences where you have preferences. I'm more drawn to this than that. I like this, I don't particularly like that. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with having preferences or liking this or liking that. The problem is, what if you don't get the thing you like and do get the thing you don't like? That's the problem, right? Because, and why is that a problem? Because the desire template for the Ajnani is, I want this so that I can be happy. For Ajnani, that's what we call a dagdha bija. That's a burnt seed. That desire template doesn't produce, or for the karma yogi, as we've been seeing, it doesn't produce that same effect. I want this, but if I don't get it, I'm fine. I don't want this. If it happens, I have to deal with it. But I'm fine. That's the thing. The mind rests in the self for its ananda. The mind, the self is the source of ananda for the mind. And so the mind sitting in the source of ananda experiences the world. And you will always go toward your preferences and away from the things that you don't prefer. It's not like everything flattens out and you see everything equally. You see everything equally in the sense that nothing is responsible for my ananda. But to say that I see everything equally, that I prefer everything in exactly the same way, that's not true. You have your samskaras, your tendencies, your preferences, your likes and your dislikes. It's just that the likes and the dislikes have lost their sting because my mind rests in myself as the source of ananda, right? That's why it says, when your antakarna, when your mind, crosses over this delusion born of aviveka, right, as Shankara talks about in his bhasha here, When it crosses over this aviveka, then at that time, you gain a natural dispassion toward everything you've heard and everything that you will hear. Because there is no object in the creation that contains the self. The self is the self. The source of Ananda is the self, period. Swamiji, if you've read, had a chance to read his commentary, he says, he takes it the next natural step. He says, Shankara says, Krishna says in this verse, you gain vairagya toward what you've heard, everything you know, and toward everything that is to be known. Because this would be the idea, well, okay, at this point, say for a person who's not a mumukshu, up to this point, right, up to this point, I have vairagya, all right. But now, what if somebody comes along and says to me, you know, well, there is something, right? There is something that you didn't know about, right?
Yeah.
Right? That really is, that really is the source of Ananda. Is that a possibility? And we say, no, that's not a possibility. For the one who has recognized the problem, any object in this creation, any object in the infinite creation at any time does not contain Ananda. There is no Ananda there to be found. If it were possible for Ananda to be found in an object, we would be giving Ananda all of the time to all beings, right? All of the time to all beings, because it was Ananda. Can you imagine holding up an Ananda object? Here it is, an Ananda object. And now you're looking at it. You're looking at it. And you are experiencing Ananda, looking at the Ananda object. How can you be experiencing the Ananda, looking at the Ananda object? Right? Because I am the Ananda. I am the Ananda. It's not possible. Even now, this is it's a beautiful meditation. Next time you experience some Ananda in terms of your vritti, thought modification, right? Then you say to yourself, can I see the Ananda? You're experiencing the thought modification, oh, I love you so much because you make me happy. Okay. You're experiencing the object, but you are the one who is happy. But you experience the nama rupa, the name and form, but you are the one who is happy. It's very interesting. So what you should do there is instead use it as a jumping off point for meditation. Let the mind at that point focus on the Ananda, on the happiness. It's actually being manifest in the mind. The nature of the self is a little different from that. But it's being manifest in the mind. So now if you have this happiness manifest in the mind, instead of focusing on the object, focus on the happiness. Right? And then you'll watch, it puts the mind into almost a samadhi to do that. Because you're no longer focusing on the object, and the mind is already completely quiet. And so now what happens is the Ananda increases. And then what you can do from that stand, from that position, right, from that meditative position that you've just taken advantage of, basically, then just let yourself relax into your own presence. Because then you can recognize the one who's aware of the Ananda. You recognize the subtle difference of the very intimate being that you are, that is present. You are the one present in the Ananda. You are the same one present in the dark vrittis also. But in the Ananda, it's much easier to get to, because when it's much easier in a sense, initially, to recognize this beautiful presence of yourself when the mind is happy. Right? Because there's no resistance to happiness. There's some resistance and tension involved around unhappiness. So when you have a happy experience, let the mind then focus on the happiness other than the object of happiness, just the happiness. And then from there go to just your own being that is present to that happiness. And then say, you ask yourself, why is this me called Ananda. Why is this labeled Ananda? Why is this presence, me, labeled the beloved? And see, you'll see it's labeled that way because that's what you are. You see that there is no greater, that even the experience of Ananda in the mind is not as beloved as the one who is present to the Ananda in the mind. The conscious being for whom this Ananda is more Ananda of its own quality than the Ananda that is present in the happy mind. So it's a very powerful meditation to do. Because where you have to end up is not in, where you have to end up in terms of your viveka, your discrimination, is not in the Ananda of the mind. Not that that's not nice, it's fine. But in the Ananda that is present to the Ananda in the mind, or the Ananda that is present to the agitated mind, the Ananda that is present to the hurting mind, to the depressed mind, to whatever mind is there, that is having all of these states. Some are enjoyable, some are not enjoyable. Some are happy, some are sad, some are painful, some are hurtful. You know, especially as your mind's working out all of its things it has to work out. There's a lot of different thoughts there and feelings there that are not happy. But they're taking place in one who is whole and complete. And that me has to be recognized. That's where you're going. You're not going here in terms of knowledge or viveka. We're not stopping at some state of mind. We're recognizing the one who is present to all states of mind. And the Ananda, how beloved that one is. And that's discovered. The mind is so happy. It's so happy because it can never be away from that self. No matter what is happening to your mind, whatever emotion is there, whatever condition is there, it's not away from you. So you become the one. Your being is the one that is always present and containing. Your benign Ananda being is present and containing whatever condition is there. Right? And so that, the mind falls in love with that self. Right? It does. And in the Gita, all through Krishna says this. So I mean, the mind revels in the self. It falls in love with the self. Right? That's its home. That's its safety. That's its security. And from there, it experiences the world. And so, and that reality is what we call vairagya. You know, it doesn't mean anything negative at all. It just means that you can be world, you can be as you are. You can be as you are, and I'll deal with it. Because I'm not at stake. If I'm not at stake, then that vairagya is real. It means I can accept you as you are. I can accept my life as it is. I can accept my situation. And just I can appreciate Ishwara. I can appreciate Ishwara, the Lord. Because otherwise I need the Lord to appreciate me. You know? Take care of, make it like this for me and make it like that for me and make it like this for what? So I can be happy. If I don't need to be made happy, if Bhagavan doesn't need to be made, he make me happy, then I can appreciate Bhagavan. Right? But if Bhagavan needs to be make me happy, I can only appreciate Bhagavan sometimes. I can appreciate Bhagavan when he's making me happy. And he's, when he's not making me happy, then, you know. But what about when I am happy? That's the vairagya. Right? And so as we mature into that knowledge, which is what he says here, as the buddhi will cross over, as it crosses over, right, this delusion brought about by this aviveka, as it crosses over, then it goes to this nirveda, this state of vairagya, toward what is heard and what will be heard. Means there's nothing that can come around the corner that will make things different. So, okay, let's stop there. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.